Welcome to Harmony Talk, a podcast about dreamers and doers. Hear people from all walks of life tell us about their dreams and the moment they knew there was no turning back as they segued from dreaming to doing. This podcast is sponsored by A.M. Skyer, a third-generation family insurance business started in 1920. My name is Greg Frigoletto, your host for this episode. Today, I am joined by Glynis Johns. Glynis is the founder and CEO of the Black Scranton Project. She is currently a New America Us at 250 Fellow. She has served on Governor Tom Wolf's Commission on African American Affairs, has been featured as a TED Talk speaker, and was recently featured in the Focus Journalism regional Emmy-winning documentary entitled The Institutions Preserving Black History in Northeastern PA. On any given day, you could say that Glynis is a historian, a sociologist, an artist, a lifelong learner, or an advocate. No matter what hat Glynis Johns is wearing, you can be assured she is wearing it passionately. In fact, according to Glynis, passions and projects are indistinguishable from each other. On top of all that, she's a wonderful person and an absolute joy to talk to. Glynis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. What an intro.
It's all true. Listen, I am really, really excited to talk to you today. From the time we last spoke, I thought a lot about all of the conversation we had, and I continue to be inspired by your story, and I look forward to sharing it with others. So, Glynis, this is a podcast that looks to inspire by sharing great stories like yours that demonstrate that dreams can become a reality. In other words, dreamers become doers. The best parts of the journey are typically found between the dreaming and the doing, kind of like amazing stories found between the dots when connecting the dots. So to begin, you grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up for you in Scranton.
Yeah, so I was born and raised here in the city of Scranton, a product of the Scranton School District. And I always was a lover of the arts. Scranton has a really solid art scene. And so I always wanted to be involved in the community, but I often felt like there wasn't representation of Black people of color. And I always wanted to hide my identity. Like when people would ask me where I'm from, I would say I'm from New York or I'm from Philly. And, you know, a lot of other people of color are transplants and do come to the city of Scranton and live their lives out here. But at the time when I was younger and in high school and things, it was a part of my identity that I wanted to disguise. So then when I left and went away to college, that's kind of when I just fell back in love with Scranton and wanting to have this representation because, like I was mentioning before, I just felt like we never really see representations of Black folks. We don't really have spaces where we can go to. And I think that's pretty much what drove me to doing the things that I am today. So
that's a great segue into what my next thought is. So like many kids, and for you, your reasons were unique to you. You believe that after graduating from high school, you wanted to experience something outside of your hometown, kind of like the I'm getting out of here mentality, like a lot of kids have for a lot of different reasons. And that thinking brought you from a small city like Scranton to a big city. In fact, you moved to one of the biggest cities, the Big Apple. So you went to New York City to attend St. John's University. Was that a good move? And was it inspirational for you?
Yeah, I think going to St. John's is probably one of the most pivotal decisions I've made in my life. My parents probably were like, why'd you put yourself in so much debt? But I think it was worth it. I truly enjoyed my college experience. I loved the campus. St. John's University is considered one of the most diverse schools. And so that is pretty much where I ran into all different types of cultures, different people. I've tried so many different foods, met so many incredible people. The faculty that guided me along my academic career was so invaluable to me. So for me, I feel like St. John's was one of the best moves and best decisions for my career that I could have made. And like I said, I stayed there for my master. So I just thought, I just felt like St. John's was for me. And I honestly feel like St. John's chose me. It's one of those things as a low-income student. I had pretty much unlimited college applications that I can apply to. And so I just applied to as many schools as I could outside of Scranton. I wanted to get out of here. When I was getting, acceptance and denial letters back, St. John's was one of the first ones. Do you want to visit the campus? Go to visit the campus and fell in love. I'm like, this is where I want to go. So yeah, the rest was history after that.
So as you were growing up in Scranton, I would imagine you had opportunities as a kid to travel to New York City. So was New York City one of the targets for you for some of the reasons that you've already talked about. You know, you were into the arts, you were into the different pieces of culture that maybe you felt were lacking in Scranton. And obviously you found that at St. John's and you became a Brooklynite. Can you tell me a little bit about the academic experience and what it felt like as you were immersing yourself into that environment?
So growing up, we would take some trips here and there. When I was in high school, I was part of the arts club. So we would go to New York and take some trips there. But honestly, when I was in high school, sometimes I would skip school and get on the MARTS bus and then spend the day in New York City and then come back, not tell my parents or anything. I know that's like, I'm not advising kids to do anything like that. But I always just like loved New York. I loved fashion. I just wanted to be around people that I felt like there was more of a culture. I felt like there was more of an energy there. Yeah, so I decided to stay there as long as I can. I thought once I graduated, I wanted to become a sociology professor. I moved to Brooklyn when I started grad school. Really fell in love with the communities in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. Met amazing people there.
One of the things that we had spoken about the last time you and I met was that some of the exposure you had when you got to St. John's was that your professors were Black. And for you, that was something that you hadn't seen before. And it was inspirational, not only in and of itself, but because you were finding super educated people that were like-minded and inspiring. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when I got to St. John's, I was an undecided. My major was undeclared. And so with your advisors, they're like, oh, go to all the departments and, you know, see where you like what classes you want to start taking. So I landed in the sociology department, and the chair of the department at the time was Professor Roderick Bush, and he passed away a few years ago. But he was sitting there and he was like, oh, welcome to the department. And that was the first time I ever saw a Black male educator. And I was just like, wow, this is really cool. And so he's telling me about classes. He's telling me about his activism. And he's telling me how he knew of Scranton, just like taking the MARTS bus and it stops through Scranton. And so he's like, sign up for these classes, see how you feel. So I signed up for a few classes. I ended up taking a class with Dr. Natalie P. Byfield. She is a phenomenal sociologist. Just her work, she does a lot of work, news and media, and looking at language and how people talk about Black folks in news and media. But just seeing her like run the classroom and just how she was so passionate about her students, I just was so enamored by her. And I just pretty much followed her around and like would go to her office hours. She ultimately became my mentor. She's the one who guided me through my research when I decided to do my graduate thesis, which ultimately became the Black Scranton Project. So yeah, I'd never seen a Black woman professor like that in my entire life. She just inspired me. It opened up a new like world for me. I know a lot of other cities and spaces, there are more diverse teachers, but in Scranton, there really never was too many. And so it was an experience for me that like it really changed what I thought I was capable of. It really showed me that there are other career paths and things that you can do. Yeah, and so she just really inspired me. She's the first person that told me like, I was smart and you're capable and you're enough to be in this department. You're enough to be in this major. You can do what you want. Even when I started my graduate thesis, no one in the department had done a graduate thesis in over 10 years. So for me, I'm an overachiever. So I wanted that accolade. I wanted to be part of the history of the department. So I took on that challenge because it was not required of me. And she walked me through the entire process. I finished my graduate thesis, which was looking at the stereotype, why if you're Black, you can't be from Scranton. And I was trying to look through a sociological perspective. But in order to do that, I had to kind of take a history route and I had to dig up some history and figure out how long Black folks had been here. And that kind of transcended into me becoming a historian because I didn't think that I would find much. But to my surprise, there was so much there. There were so many little nuggets that kind of compiled the story. And it made me feel like, wow, we have identity here in Scranton. We have a whole robust community that has just been overlooked. And why is that? And so once I finished my graduate thesis, I couldn't leave all that work within those 75 pages. So I moved back in 2017 to Scranton, and I just started going to the local universities, the elementary, middle, and high schools. And I'm like, hey, can I tell you about some local Black history? And I would just do talks. I would just tell people about what I knew. And that kind of just snowballed into developing a whole nonprofit.
One of the things I had heard you mention previously was that growing up in Scranton, you and your friends and family would attend cultural events like the St. Patrick's Day Parade or Festival Italiano. And one of the things that you realized later was, although these were fun events and the community all embraced them, you recognized that there might be a piece of local history that's missing in celebrating in an annual cultural event or on a more regular basis. And that would be your path kind of to going into the Black History Project that you have. So while you were at St. John's, you talked a lot about your thesis, and perhaps the thesis is one of the defining moments that really for you started to connect the dots. So that was a pivotal moment for you. And if you could, from having those words on paper, what transpired that had you realize, okay, this is what my next steps are going to be, taking you from a happy Brooklynite, enjoying everything that New York had to offer, to thinking, okay, now I'm going to go back to my hometown of Scranton. What was your vision at that point?
Yeah, like you mentioned, the cultural activities and traditions that are already here, I would participate in. You know, all the kids would go to the St. Patrick's Day parade, wear green. Everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. The Italian festival, I love cannolis. Everybody goes down there and everybody has a beautiful time. But for me, it always was just like, wow, like, why is it that all these other cultures get to take up so much space and we celebrate it? Like, it's something that everybody gets involved in. When I first started thinking about what I wanted my graduate thesis to be about, I came home during Thanksgiving, my first semester, it was 2015, came back home, and in Scranton, the night before Thanksgiving is like a big drinking holiday. So everybody is out at the bars, people are downtown, you know, you're seeing people you haven't seen since high school. And I was downtown and I was having this conversation with someone I hadn't seen in a while. And they're like, oh, where did you go to high school? I'm like, I went to Scranton High, and I know you went there too. They're like, did you? But you're Black. Like, I know all the Black people from our graduating class. And that stuck with me so much because it just felt like, yeah, there's not that many of us. But then for you to feel like you knew all of us and had an account of all of us, it just struck me in an interesting way. So I took that and I went back to school and I'm like, okay, I know what I want to look at. I know I want to investigate the stereotype. And so the title of my graduate thesis is But You're Black, the Overlooked Community of Scranton, Pennsylvania. So yeah, when I finished all that work and I came back here, that's pretty much the title was just like running through my mind of how do I convince people that, yeah, but you're Black, but we're doing all these things in the community. So I just kind of would set up anywhere, like make little stickers that say Black Scranton Project and let people know what we had going on, like just let people know what I wanted to share with the community. And it just like snowballed. So 2019, pushing into Black History Month of 2019, I realized that we never really celebrated Black History Month. And I felt like this could be an opportunity to take all of my research and then put it into an exhibit in a gallery space where people can interact with it. So I approached the Steamtown Mall and, you know, it was kind of closing. There was a lot of empty storefronts. And I just thought this would be a good place to maybe put up all of the history and artifacts that I've found and collected over the past 3 years. And so I was like, hey, I don't have any money really, but like, can I borrow one of these storefronts? And it'd be kind of a cultural cool thing. And they're like, actually, that is a cool idea. All you have to do is pay the utilities for the month and the space is yours. It's going to be a lot of work to clean it up, but do your thing. So I just was in there for all of January cleaning up this empty, dusty storefront. And I got a grant from the Lackawanna County Arts Department. It wasn't one of my first grants, but it was one grant that I didn't know was available for community artists. They're just like, this is a cool project that we hear you talking about around the community. You know, we can give you a couple $100 to like offset your printing and whatever. Just, you know, apply this way and we'll see what we can do. So I did that, got like $500. I worked with Center City Print and they gave me a good deal to print the things that I needed. And February 1st also happened to be First Friday in Scranton, which is a big cultural art scene, like art walk kind of thing, which I kind of mentioned earlier. It was something that I always enjoyed going to. And so, you know, with the help of the arts department, we put my event on the map for First Friday. We opened First Friday, February 1st, packed house. There were so many people in there. Everybody loved it. It was one of the most diverse rooms I'd ever seen in my entire life. There was people in their 80s, 90s with walkers. There was little kids. People were asking me so many questions. Certain people remembered part of these communities. Certain people remembered some of the folks that I had highlighted, and it was awesome. And at that time, I was subbing here in Scranton at the school district, and I also was an adjunct professor teaching some courses at St. John's at this point. I was teaching a couple online courses. And so because I was able to work from Scranton and teach online, I would sit in the gallery space every day because I had it for the month and I didn't just want it open on the weekends. So I would sit there in the morning as the operating hours of the mall. And it was very simple then. I just had a piece of paper and I would just tally every single person that came into the space. And after they extended my rental, so I had it for 2 months. So after the 7 or 8 weeks that I was open, we had over 1,200 people walk through the gallery space. And as a sociologist who worked with statistics, if you crunch those numbers, that's really like 2% of Scranton's entire population. And so for me, that felt like an impact because the Black community right now is about 5%. And so the fact that 2% of Scranton's population walked through to see what I had to offer in terms of local history was so impactful. And that pretty much catapulted me into turning Black Scranton into a nonprofit.
So there you were at your space at the mall, and it sounds like it started with a lot of work, however, super successful. From there, your space transitioned into something completely different. And I wish you could spend just a few minutes telling us about where you are now and what your hopes are for the space you're in.
So after that exhibit, I kind of made it a tradition since 2019 that I wanted to do an annual Black History Month exhibit somewhere. So 2020, we were at the AFA Gallery. Then it was the pandemic. We didn't really do much. And because of the Black Lives Matter movement during 2020, our nonprofit started getting a lot of attention. We started getting like more donations and grants. And I really wanted a space for everything that I was collecting. I have so many artifacts now of just pieces of local history that I really want to maintain and display. So I was looking, scoping out the real estate, trying to, you know, rent a space or buy a space. Nobody was going to rent or allow me to buy. It's crazy because a lot of people saw what I was doing as a liability instead of a community asset. But PNC Bank had been a supporter of my work and programs. And, you know, they would give us grants and donations or whatever to help offset community building. And I knew they owned this historic bank that was closed for several years. So I said, hey, I know you don't want this property, but would you consider donating it to our org so we can turn it into a community center? And they're like, we don't really do stuff like that. But if you create a proposal, we can look it over and we'll see what we could do. Do you have a legal team? I thankfully did. And I worked with them and they're like, you can't really say much, but go ahead, create a little thing and we'll talk. So I spent 2 weeks just working on a proposal. I thought if I make this the best thing, if I can show them everything I want to do in this space, there's a possibility that they would give us this bank. So the bank had been closed for about 6 years prior to us getting it. So April 2021, we acquired the bank from PNC. They donated the property to Black Scranton. And ever since April of 2021, I've been here trying to renovate, restore, and convert this historic bank that's almost 100 years old into the Black Scranton Project Center for Arts and Culture. We've had smaller events here. We host artists. We host entrepreneurs. We've had little parties and all different types of things. We've had open mics and game nights. So it's turning into a community space. And I love that this community bank is now turning into another community space. Yeah, it's a labor of love, but I wouldn't want to be doing anything else right now.
So the space that you're talking about is a meeting place, a meeting ground, if you would, for the community. So people could find art, culture, history, events. They could have fundraisers there. So really, it's an all-encompassing facility that supports your nonprofit that's open to anybody for all walks of life. In essence, I think one of your mottos would be, you belong here. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I just feel like there's not many safe spaces for Black people for us to do what we want to do, to have the cultural events that we want, to have community. As unfortunate as it is, there is like this in the national like consciousness that Black people gathering is inherently dangerous. And it's really the opposite of that. Every time we get together, it's a beautiful thing. It's not exclusionary. There's so many people that join in on what we're doing. And so, yeah, I just want there to be a space that's accessible to everyone, whether you have a disability, whether you're on the fringes of the community, doesn't matter your sexuality, it doesn't matter your age. I want the space to be accessible and safe for whoever wants to be here. And so I've been working really hard to create this space, but also I'm very much inspired by the Schomburg Research Center in Harlem. And so I want this to be like the Northeastern Pennsylvania version of the Schomburg Center. Arturo Schomburg, almost 100 years ago himself, created this space in Harlem just to archive and hold the Black culture in New York City. And I just think it was like a fascinating thing, and just studying his life and his work and the resistance that it took to start it. And now looking at it 100 years later, how it is just a central space for Black culture and arts and just the Black experience. And so I just want our region to be connected to the Black experience, because we are. We're connected to the Underground Railroad. We've had successful business folks. We've even like been a space for some of the legendary artists that we know, like Langston Hughes even mentioned being in Scranton in one of his poems. And it's just really interesting, like, to know that we are so adjacent to so many things, but we just remained invisible. And so I kind of want to cast a light, so to speak, on all of that.
And it sounds like you are casting a very bright light, and the Black Scranton Project is fulfilling what your goals are. You know, three things that I've always noted as I've been preparing to speak to you about the Black Scranton Project. It basically has an umbrella which includes resources, knowledge, and community. And I think you're successfully, very successfully, kind of going through each one of those characteristics. So that's a big project, and you've had a lot of success. And for you, you know, the dreamer and the doer part, you're in the midst of the doing part. However, you might wonder, or I wonder, where does Glynis Johns go from here?
Whoa, that's a loaded question. In terms of dreaming and doing, I feel that deeply. Like, I honestly have dreamed about all of the things that I'm doing now. I dreamed about having this space, and it became a reality. And so for me, I just dream that the kids and the youth here feel like, I love Scranton. This is my hometown. I want to participate in culture and community. I want to be a homeowner here. I want to open up a business. And I want people to feel that and not feel like I have to move away, you know, to do that. And I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, because I definitely did move away. But I think that's also fine, you know, step outside of the boundaries of Scranton, experience life, see the world, and then, yeah, come back and contribute to your hometowns. And I think that's something that we should do everywhere. And I think local history is something that is always on the fringes of disappearing. And I think no matter what your culture is, family histories, community histories are important, because somebody is going to want to remember you. Or in like this case, some things just kind of seem lost. And then here I am plucking out people from the history books and the archives and just like lost newspaper clippings. And now they're being like honored across the state as game-changing Black women. And I just love that, like, I kind of was able to help facilitate that. And so I always tell people, especially young people, don't be afraid to go after your passions. Don't be afraid to do the things that you want to do, because at the end of the day, you can't go wrong with that. As long as you are living in your own truth, you will always be successful. And so I always let my students know too, like, if you love music, if you love photography, but you hate writing papers, you know, there's a way that you can incorporate all the things that you love into the things that you have to do. And so I think that is kind of how I ended up creating my own career, so to speak, because while I was working for other people, or while I was doing some of the things that I had to do, I was still infusing the things that I was passionate about, and it became so much better than what it could have been.
Well, when we started this conversation, one of the ways I described you is passionate. And the last question I had, you actually just answered, and it was in line with, to any avid dreamer that's out there, what words of wisdom would you give? And you just gave a lot of words of wisdom and encouragement for our listeners who might be in the dreaming phase. And I think a large part of your answer is to be passionate about whatever it is you do.
Yes. And I think I'll add to that consistency. And that is still something that I am working on. And what I found is the progress is in the small steps. Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm not doing anything. Like, this is terrible. Why am I here? Like, nothing's going right. Nothing's going. And then I kind of step back and I zoom back and I'm like, wow, first of all, you have this entire building that you're working on. But two, you were able to get all of these things done. And sometimes one of my professors would always say, like, bite by bite, you know? So you just have to take it one bite at a time, one step at a time, and you'll actually get there. And so just hold steady to the fact that what you're doing is worth something, and that what you're doing, someone's watching it and is, you know, inspired by that. And so I kind of take that with me every day and just keep chipping away.
Glynis, if people would like to follow you or learn more about the Black Scranton Project, how can we find you?
You could find us at blackscranton.org or across all social media platforms at Black Scranton. We are always looking for support and donations. So if you feel like you can give a couple dollars, any way to support this project, to support the Center for Arts and Culture, it would mean so much. So thank you again.
And your social media in particular?
You can find me, Glenish Johns, in the internet streets. If you're on Instagram, I'm @is_that_Glenish. And that's pretty much the only social media that I kind of do personally.
I would encourage all of you listeners to follow Glenys on her social media platforms. And again, learn more about the Black Scranton Project at blackscranton.org. So when you're on the path from dreaming to doing, it's important to celebrate small victories and also time to step back and enjoy the moment. And I have to tell you, Glenys, I have thoroughly enjoyed the moments I've spent with you as part of the Harmony Talk podcast. And I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg. This was fun.
Thank you. I've been talking with Glenys Johns, founder and CEO of the Black Scranton Project, a 501c3 nonprofit organization and heritage initiative dedicated to archiving and celebrating Black history and culture in Scranton, Pennsylvania. This has been Harmony Talk by A.M. Skyer, a third-generation family insurance business started in 1920. I'm Greg Frigoletto. Thank you to Glenys Johns for being with us today. To our listeners, continue to be inspired to segue from dreaming to doing.